Welcome to the Inbox Podcast with Vincent Sugira. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Inbox Podcast with Vincent Sugira. Today, I just invited my friend, my good friend indeed, since how long?
Since friendship started around 2019. Yeah, and we're 2024, so that's been, how many years? You did math.
Almost five.
Yeah.
Back then when you used to laugh at me a lot, when I was broke. All right, so today, before we get into it, I'd like you to know who we are together with.
My name is Asimwe Hirgwa de Bohameila.
She's a very young, accomplished woman, I may say. So she's currently working at the Agoz Shalom Youth Village as a gender equity focal point person. As a gender equity focal point person, she runs workshops about gender equity and equality. She organizes workshops about mental health and ensures that the village has a sustainable gender equity culture.
So she's there, and she's been there for 1 year, right after she graduated high school. And now she also sits at the Youth Advisory Board for MasterCard Foundation. She's been there for like 1 year and 3 months up to this moment. And she's been the co-host of Bits of Good podcast. What's that?
It's a podcast that helped, I mean, how do I explain this? But it's a podcast that started, it doesn't work. I mean, it sort of paused right now. It's on pause. But it's a podcast that helped interview people that are doing great work around the world to help.
Around the world. So it's global.
It was with an amazing co-host who lives in the United States. And it's for listeners to get to understand people's bit of good. So we all have a bit of good into this world that we're adding. So it was to bring out the bit of good that individuals, social organizations and businesses are doing around the world.
So among all the other things she has done, she has co-founded or founded Bell Initiative, which is there to assist vulnerable young girls to find their inner beauty beyond their vulnerabilities by bringing healing into their lives through storytelling. I didn't know you're a storyteller. Since when?
We're all storytellers in our own ways. But yeah, storytelling is one of the most healing tools, especially for young
true.
People.
Oh, yeah. So I'm so happy to have you here, man.
It's really
amazing. So here we talk about mostly about mental health, lifestyle. And I think to have a person like you is a really big deal, because I think one of the things we consider most about is the young professionals trying to make it into the professional world at a very young age. I mean, how is it? And I think you'd understand this more as a person who directly after high school, you're already in the professional working environment. So how is it to be you at this moment?
Well, is it in terms of as a professional, as a young professional?
And socially?
I think being me, that's a good question. Being me in such an such an environment, such an era, is having to bear the pressure of that may come with wanting to make it and want to make have standards that society may put in. But it also means trying to navigate still navigate the trials and the shenanigans, as I may say, of being a young person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's really an interesting thing to combine both, mm-hmm. because as you said, as a young professional, there are different. I don't think I consider myself a young professional yet.
I mean, okay.
Yet,
but
I'm sure it's coming.
In the professional world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think being a young person in the professional world comes with, especially given the fact that being a young person and you're in a professional world, you hear a lot of, oh my God, I can't believe your age, or how can you do this at your age?
Yeah.
So there is like a pressure, not even a pressure, but there's a tendency of wanting to keep that and not wanting to let people down. And that can be sometimes with a little knowledge or little exposure, it can be very heavy to handle. Mm-hmm. And given the fact that you have that to handle, you also have trials of being a young person.
Yeah.
Being a young person is definitely, you have social media, you have all these shenanigans of being a young person. So it's striking a balance between both, mm-hmm. and or even integrating both into a life of being a person at the end of the day, because beyond being young, you're a human being.
Yeah. I think talking about the pressure that comes with being in a professional environment as a young person, and having, I don't know, people doubting you or people questioning your age and everything. Yeah. How do you deal with that? I mean, do you sometimes regret to be like, people of my age are there enjoying the world, exploring more fun stuff than, you know, trying to be professionally on a standard at a very young age? Like, do you sometimes feel like you should be doing something else?
I once read somewhere that said expectation is a luxury. And I think I'm very grateful that there is that kind of pressure, that there is there are expectations of me, and they really push me to do great stuff as far as I am concerned. They're great, they push me to progress, and I'm able to reflect on the expectations that people have of me and my own expectations. However, this can be really, really pressuring as a young person, because there's a thing called FOMO. I really recently learned about this, but there's FOMO, and as much, I don't think I have FOMO so much, but there is a point, I also have the conversations of, you're a young person, you're in work, you spend lots of your hours in work, you're not seen in these events, or why didn't I see you in this concert?
Yeah.
How come you didn't go to this? You're a young person, you're supposed to go there. So it's like, and some people would tell me, or a person like me out there, you will have retour d'âge, if you know what that means.
Oh,
like, you'll get at some point, and you will want to come back to your young age. It really comes with a lot of highs and lows. Mm-hmm. But I think it's on, the point becomes on what you want, what your life to be about. Mm-hmm. Why you're not doing these things. Mm-hmm. And why you're doing the things you're doing.
But don't you sometimes feel left out? Like, or left behind, because obviously there are some of the things that are happening that your generation is really involved in, and to them, maybe when you talk, don't you ever feel like a foreigner or like you don't belong when you're with the people of your age, simply because you don't live in the same world?
Yes, sometimes I think or any young person that is in a professional environment, the things they go through, especially if they, because I have tendencies of, I love working. I think it just gives me I love working. I'm happy when I'm working and I'm working on stuff. So there's a world that is created in the process. There's a world of, there's a different world that is created with a person who is a normal person of my age, who is out there living, going to these shows. I used to feel left out, but I think now it's more about the choices I make and less about what a person my age is supposed to do. And if I start feeling left out, then I know there is certainly a gap, or if I if I work and at the end of my work, or let's say I'm going to bed and I feel unhappy or exhausted or burned out, I know there's a gap to fill, and I have to think of, how do I feel this? What makes me happy? How can I pause a little bit and catch up with things that actually make me happy? Because there is a spirit of being left, not even a spirit, but the sense of being left out, the sense of feeling left out, can give you pressure that would even sometimes let you or make you take bad decisions, whatever that means. But I think I've learned to be more awakened or more aware of what feeling left out means for me, and what I can do to not feel left out in that aligns with my own values, with who I want and who I want to become.
So that made me question, if you were to go back maybe and give advice to a young Deborah who is in senior four right now, you know, would you tell her to make the same choices as you did, career-wise, professional-wise, or the way you've chosen to live your life?
I think yes. I would not. I would tell her to definitely stay as passionate, to definitely yearn for more. But I would tell her not to beat herself up for, because I think the younger me really beat herself up, and I still do. Beat herself up to meet some standards, I used to really, really have a lot of pressure to be someone, and that's probably the stages of my life I probably skipped because of looking so much into the future and ignoring the present. So I think I would definitely encourage her to still be passionate and motivated, but enjoy the present more. And the future will definitely uncover as days come.
What would you tell her about having fun?
I would,
because for real, let's be honest, I feel like we're in the world where everything goes so fast, and I was going to ask you about it, but now that we talk about it, I'd like to think of it as, if we say there is the top 1% that leads the world, and we could try to assign 1% at every age group. I'd say maybe you could be part of the 1% of your generation in this country that, you know, are doing great stuff, you know, that people are involved in what you're involved in. Because so now that I think that comes with a lot of responsibilities, and pressure that is both from older people who have very, very high expectations of you, and the people of your generation who think that you are out of their league, or maybe you don't match their vibe. You know, you understand what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So now, how do you deal with it? Because you have to deal with people who want to see you succeed, at least people who tell you they want to see you succeed. And you have to deal with your generation. And those are most likely your friends. Those are the people you're going to hang out with afterwards and stuff. But then those people may not be able to understand you, especially depending, like you said, on the standards you've set yourself on. So how do you deal with that? How do you balance that? Because I feel like that could be emotionally consuming.
Yeah, and that's true. It can be emotionally consuming. And I was really, really struggling with the concept of balance at some point in my life. And to some extent, I think I'm still learning about balance. But someone once told me that life balance is not really something, but it's life integration.
Overrated.
Life balance is for sure overrated. I think one thing that is very, very... She mentioned about life integration instead of life balance. And it's around the fact that instead of trying to balance things, let's try to integrate things into our lives. If there's work and there's friends and there is family and there is other responsibilities, how do we integrate them into one life? And sometimes it won't be balanced, but at least let's say today I will give 80% to work and maybe tomorrow I'll give 90% to family or friends. However, if I had to, so I'm learning to integrate my generation, integrate friends. And I don't necessarily agree that my friends should not only be from my generation, like my age. I can have friends who are, yes, young, but there's, you know, I think friends are, it's a heavy word. So having a friend that is your age is not the only, does not qualify, or a person your age does not qualify to be your friend. So as I navigate the professional world, the academic world, I think I'm also learning to integrate friends and a social life more. Yeah, because being a young person out there and trying to, you know, not even prove a point, but there is that there's people will say, I don't think a high school student, for example, or someone this age do this thing. So entering that position or stepping in those shoes requires a lot of energy, requires a lot of commitment, a lot of focus. And that can sometimes tend to, if not well managed, can sometimes tend to blind your eye into the social life. So integrating is really, really key for me. And it's something I'm learning every day, every day.
I mean, yeah. I understand that you're learning that, and maybe you've been at the point where you feel like we're really lacking that, and you had to give it a try and improve on it. But I'm more interested again in, you know, how did it make you feel when you couldn't balance that? How did it make you feel when you, because let's be honest, there are people out there who are struggling with that, you know, people who are really struggling with the age expectations, professional world, friendships and stuff, you know. So I want to know, like, when it happened back then, how did you deal with it? How did it make you feel emotionally? How was you actually?
When I discovered that...
No, before you could discover how you can balance things out, yeah? I'm pretty sure you've been in a situation where you were like, I want to know. That's what I want to know.
Oh, that's a good one. I think I'm grateful to be involved in work that I love. Mm-hmm. I really, really love the work, the different work I'm doing, and I enjoy it. I enjoy working with people. But I remember being hit by, my surrounding was like people that were in work. Like, my life was really all about work. Mm-hmm. It was like work. I rest and I'm too tired. And it's like either I'm working or I'm sleeping or sleeping. So there was no social life. So and I remember having friends. They weren't complaining, but they were checking up on me. And the way they were checking on me was like, we hope you're doing good. Because it's like unconsciously I had built up a wall that it was very, very unconscious because of work, and I was sure that probably some of the challenges I was facing, some of my friends would not understand. So building up that wall did then put a gap between me and some of them, and it was really, really heavy. It was to recognize that, because I was very unconscious to it. But when I recognized it, it was a bit, it was hard. It was hard. And as someone who loves people and loves hanging out with people, I think I had to recognize that it's something I had to work on. And it was very, very, very hard. But I'm still trying to navigate. I'm friendship building is something that I'm really navigating, and I'm learning every day. I'm learning to invest.
That's really good. And I think now that you talked about that, I don't know if it has to do with the concept of how old somebody is and what they're involved into, but I want to ask you, I think there are some life experiences that hit us really hard, simply because maybe there are things we've not lived, Yeah. So now I want to know, have you ever been in a situation where you were like, okay, now I think I've had enough. I think I need to take a rest, or I need to take a break, because this is too much for me. It can be work-wise, it can be social-wise, it can be, you know.
It's very recent. Very, very recent.
Oh, really?
Very, very recent.
What happened?
What happened? I think... No, I don't even think. I know. It was... I was... Being a passion... I don't want to name this. But being... Being as passionate as I am with what I do, I take things really, really close. Like, I would take things very personal. And I was just taking, and I was work, and I really hope in any working environment, it's not fair, but I have expectations of everyone I'm working with to have as much passion as I have for the work I'm doing. And honestly, I work with amazing people who do it in different ways, very interesting people. But very recently, I realized how much I was taking things personally. I was, I wasn't having time for anything than work. It was work, 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 work. And I felt burnt out. I started a virtue in like 2020 of like waking up a bit earlier because of the responsibilities and focusing on other things that would be interesting in terms of my own self, taking care of myself. But in those days, I realized even waking up was hard. I couldn't wake up. I was overeating. Not in the terms, I had a bad relationship with food, because I saw food as like, it was either like food to help me go through it and go back to work.
Yeah.
Vincent. There's such small signs that I wasn't. You'd ask me how I am, and I was just scared to go deeper than good, because I wasn't aware of how I was. I was out of touch with myself, out of touch with my friends and family, and I just hoped everyone talked to me about work, because that's all I knew for them. So that was a very, very bad sign to me, and I knew I had to take some rest. And taking rest was hard, because I think I started with I started thinking, okay, I've worked so hard, it would be so fair for me to go somewhere and treat myself nice. It'd be fair, right?
Yeah.
But it was like, no, it's guilt. I felt a level of guilt attached to having rest. And I think in this generation, or in this era where working so hard, hard work, hard working, commitment is, and burnout is over, is really praised and applauded for. Without consciousness, one can lose it to hard work and work. And I just hope we all find that that thing that tells us to slow down.
Wake up call.
That wake up call.
Yeah.
Yeah, that reminds us to slow down.
How did you deal with that though? Like,
I think given the things, all that and everything else that was happening in my life, I started therapy. I started therapy because I knew it was the only... I started therapy to get more conscious, because I had lost touch with myself. So I didn't even know how to do it. I didn't know how to help myself. And I knew perhaps with bringing some thoughts to... some words to how I felt would probably help me understand myself better and then know how to deal with it. So I think therapy was something that really, really helped me. And it got me into journaling. I got back my sense of writing. I got back slowly. I got back things that I had lost. And yeah, that's the beginning of how I started working on it. I didn't get over it. I worked on it.
Yeah. Still on the process.
Still on the process.
I think now that you mentioned something about therapy, it's one of the most heated argument, discussion, topic, you know, among people of our age and a little bit higher, simply because, first, some old generation don't understand the point of actually going to therapy. Some people of our age think it's embarrassing and so shameful to in the first place to feel the need of going to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Others think it's the right thing to do, but they're shy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a stigma, there is a mm-hmm. stereotype around it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as someone who at least was able to feel like, yo, I need therapy, mm-hmm. you know. So what do you say about every stigma around therapy and every stigma and stereotype and negative conceptions about mental health in general?
Yeah, so we live in a country. I think many of us are having, given the history of our country, I think we have, at this point, we have a little bit evolved. We have evolved, mm-hmm. if these conversations can even come to our tables, and we can talk about mental health, we can talk about different things, we can know how to associate and act with something, but there's really, really still stigma. And I think it's very important for us as a nation, it's very important for us as people to learn to navigate these challenges. And I think I've been able to work with different young people through the journey I am on to try to navigate and talk about intergenerational trauma that has been going on. And it's very hard for some of us as young people to acknowledge that we have these things. And trauma comes in different ways. And trauma is a big word. I have to acknowledge. Trauma is a big word. We don't only go to therapy because of trauma. If we can go to the hospital to get our blood tested, it is worth going to the hospital to get our mental health checked. So that helps us as a nation in our journey of building our country. Mm. It helps us. I've learned a lot from people that have shared with me their stories and have started their journeys of healing, that are on their journeys of healing, that have not started their journeys of healing. But I think the first step is acknowledging that we need the consciousness of how our minds are working. We need the consciousness of why do we act like this in terms of you know, when circumstances like this arise? Mm-hmm. Why do I think like this? Why can't I, you know, some of these things that attribute to probably how we were raised, that attribute to things we saw going around in our environment. Mm-hmm. And I will go a lot on intergenerational trauma because I have seen intergenerational trauma.
Yeah, I think you're even writing a book about that.
I've just been able to hear and experience how the profound effect that it can have on mm-hmm. on the lives of young people. And yeah, I think, but it's really worth acknowledging that I don't know if you're only speaking, would you want me to only speak in terms of the stigma and stereotype?
I mean the
stigmas and stereotypes, they're there, and mm-hmm. it's now the it will also be a generational another generational conflict of, I just know people, older people who cannot understand me for saying that I go to therapy. Because how do you pray? How do you say you pray and you go to therapy? Or you guys are only dealing with all this because these things you're dealing with, we went through worse. And I know they did go through worse, yeah? Mm. But there is also our generations that are so I will not go into the generational conflicts that are there during this time. But I think a simple act of acknowledging that our minds just need a check-in. Let's not take it to the other level of Mihera Haria go. It's called Ngo Yasaze, Aje Kwivuza Kwako Yasaze. Or how the place Ndera itself is known as a place where people go when they have mental health issues. But I really want to acknowledge the progress that we're making.
I'll tell you a funny story.
Yeah.
I remember there's this time I wanted to go for therapy, yeah?
Mm.
So I called my friend and then I asked her, yo, tell me, because she had told me she had gone for therapy before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I called her. I was like, yo, you told me you have a therapist. You said she's good, blah, 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 blah. So may I please have her number? And then she sent me the number.
Mm.
So, and I did that. And I it is a re, it's a rezi, something like that, yeah? And it's a hospital nuvundi for people with mental problems and stuff. So, the agenda, I went to meet the therapist, and she was nice, by the way. I mean, she was okay.
Mm.
And then we started talking and talking. No, ndiye kwishura. I think nararebye bampaye chira. Shakwa baramaye ntuze. The ni but there iri akira kintu baguhereza igipapuro baguhereza before you pay.
Yes, and it's yeah.
I don't know kuntu kitwa. Urumva?
Yeah.
No, nirebyeho. Nishira code muri phone. Itambona ngo ndera psycho blah blah blah. Wow, it's like I know I don't have a problem with going to therapy and everything, but I think I've had this perspective that if you go anything related in data, whatever, bro, you've got to check yourself again. No, 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 I did.
Oh yes, I feel you. I feel you. Aiko, it's also in seeing where, why do we think, like, where does the stigma root from? Is it, we could also think it's, it roots from the, in, on a community level, where yes, some of us want to heal, but we do not want the name of these things tied to us. We do not want the name of, we do not want whatever we pass through to define us, or we do not want the, our community to see that we're struggling. Yeah, I could, I know, like, I know some of my family members who acknowledge that they need help, that they could go for therapy. But in community gatherings, in family gatherings, this is something that they would, it's, there is just that dignity in it that you don't want to lose, and it's still a process, Kavisa. It's, I'm not, I'm sure that it's gonna take time for these thoughts to break. Aiko, your dignity of no, of, it's not even dignity, I don't know how to call it. I hope we find the right wording. But if we find, manage to find as a community why, where the stigma roots from, then we might as well be able to tackle it slowly by slowly. But it's worth acknowledging the progress that has been there. Our, and we also have to acknowledge that mental health services are not yet affordable. They're not yet affordable. I know a friend who was looking for a therapist and they're really struggling, but they couldn't find a therapist because they were very, very expensive. And on the community, you know, in on the health services, on the centre de santé, they tend to be there, but it takes a very long time. So it's progressing. We still got effort to put in. But yeah, it's a journey that requires all of us to reach on our reach. Like, tell a person that is in your reach.
Okay, now what can you tell a person, who is at the point where they feel like they should go to therapy, but they're held back by every misconception about it? What would you tell them?
First of all, linear, healing is not going to be linear. Because there is a way you go to therapy. This was me before when I went to therapy. You go to therapy, you're like, I expect all my problems to end in a in an order. I want to be able to come out of therapy. This therapist has to heal me. The healing, if anything, is the is one of the messiest things that, that is there. So one has to go to therapy prepared that they're studying a messy process and they need to trust the process. And then now around the community, the thing around you is, okay, sometimes there are, as a person who also has, who tends to have and is healing from people-pleasing tendencies, there is a feeling of wanting to do things that will be less criticized. But when you're dealing with things, you're dealing with them alone. When the anxiety hits, it hits alone. When the depression hits, it hits alone. when you cannot focus, or when there's anything wrong with your mental health, or when there's a thing that is just bothering you, you know it happens to you alone. So you might as well want to do something that works, that you know might work for you. So start the process. I think the thing is in starting. The most important thing is starting. And yeah, it takes courage. It really does take courage. It really does take courage, especially from a culture that we do not share a lot about things we're struggling with. Yeah, it takes courage, but start and let's see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, man, I think we've, especially for boys, I may say, I think sometimes it's really hard to share stuff, you know, because I don't know, like we are built with the character that we got it all, you know, and sometimes it can be very, very hard. Yeah. So what do you think people should do to start at least normalize sharing things they are going through? I mean, at least not to everyone, but at least to people who are close to you, because we definitely don't want to have, I know they like to say we have a very, very sad generation, but it doesn't have to be the case. Or maybe it's the case, but that's not how it should be. Huh? So what would you say, what does it take to open up to actually someone? Like, what is it with our generation that we cannot even open up to people who are so close to us? Our friends, I'm talking about.
I think we've just not... opening up has never been part of our lives. We've never seen people open up. So it's, you know, it's hard to do it ourselves. Start the process, or start the thing. So I think it's in also finding the right people to share to. But how do you know the right people? I wish I knew how to answer this, but to me, when I hear such a thing, is how do I offer a safe space for anyone who's ready? Or for anyone who's willing to. And that's, to me, that's where it starts from. How do you offer a safe space for someone to share? Because what are some of the things that make us not share? Or they might see me as a weak person, or my family might be viewed as weak, or so there's some of the things that do not, very many of these things. So how do we create a safe space for people to share? And by creating a safe space, do you trust that a safe space could be created for you? And in the mere fact of understanding that it takes, because, and I think we talked about this before. We talked about positive and toxic masculinity and being raised. I cannot cry. I understand. Uh-huh. Like, being raised as a man in this community, as you're taught, you're raised to believe that you are a man. Umugabo, you cannot cry, you cannot express how you feel. You're meant to figure it out and find bread for your family. So crushing that thing that you were raised to believe all your years is definitely a process too. But as anything else, I think just understanding that you are a person, you know, you are a person, and you got feelings. You need to let them go, because when they pile up, it becomes a They gave me a very good analogy of a sponge. So when a sponge that washes dishes, so it can get, you know, it sometimes gets water when it's, but it's when it's too much, it starts leaking. So that's what happens. So we want mindful men in this generation, by the way. We want mindful men. So mindful men are able to express, or we are able to express our themselves, are able to talk about how they feel, how able to create safe spaces for themselves, and create and be able to honor the safe spaces and encourage more people to talk about how they feel. We definitely don't want you know, and this is misinterpreted. And I saw this with the boys and men we were discussing within the Men's Mental Health Week. Someone like, do you want me to go crying everywhere? Or do you want me when I get a shot to cry? But that's not what it means. That's not what crying means. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, crying means crying when you... sometimes you feel like crying, but you do not allow yourself to cry because you were raised to be a man and you cannot cry. Mm. Yeah, that's, you know... But I think it starts in definitely creating safe spaces for each other and understanding that you are a human being and human beings express themselves.
Yeah, and understanding it's even okay. I mean, I think the problem is the fact that you don't feel okay, but then you feel not okay for not feeling okay, you know, stuff like those.
What's one thing that you think stops specifically men from sharing?
I can't speak for every man I know, but at least I'd say generally it's the pride and the sense you know, being the handler of almost everything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so when you feel that kind of responsibilities, because the truth is, as a man, you may not even have a lot of responsibility, a lot of responsibilities. But when it comes to sharing your emotions, when it comes to expressing how you feel, now you feel you're so responsible for your feelings, your thoughts, and then you'll be like, okay, now that I feel this responsibility, I know I've got to deal with it alone. Like, I have to deal with it. Whatever it is, I have to deal with it. So that's why you find some of us men, you know, we bury ourselves in drugs. We do some crazy things,
Please,
so
go ahead.
I think that's one way of coping with, you know, that feeling of responsibilities that you feel like, you know, even if you shared it with anyone, you feel like, you know, how is it going to look and stuff. I think that's the case, and trust me, we are not okay, we are getting there, but I don't think we have created a community where it's okay as a man to express how you're feeling. Because trust me, I have some friends whose girlfriends are still struggling to get them to open up. They'll be like, bro, I'm your girlfriend, can't you tell me the damn problem, tell me what's going on, you know? And I feel like it's a process though, and I think we are lucky that at least people of our generation understand that. And sometimes, you know, they are okay to talk about these kinds of stuff.
And like you said, I think leaking, going back to the analogy that we talked about, leaking comes in drugs, you know, all these things that are not healthy for a community. Even for themselves. We hope that we can keep progressing.
Yeah. So now, I think we didn't talk about the fact that you're writing a book. And it's something that we talked about when you were talking about the experiences you have had with people struggling with mental health, simply when it comes to generational, whatever, conflict and stuff, you know. So I'd like to think that maybe you've had conversations with people and of our age or young people. Let's not keep saying our age anyway. you've had conversations with them, but I want to know from the conversations you've had with them, so what would you put as your general overview or understanding of mental health among the youth? At least we're talking about, at least drawing from your research, your interactions with them. in the process of writing your book, of course.
I got a great one. I don't think I'm in position of giving it a general overview.
Yeah, we've set the basis for it. We're going to
based on who I have been mm-hmm. in contact with and who I've been interacting with. I think my basis of interaction with these most of these young people is how being raised in a country where our parents, in one way or another, have faced different wounds. I want to use the word trauma a lot, but different wounds. How is it growing up in such a country that is rebuilding themselves, especially after the horrific genocide against the Tutsi in 1994? And it's something that most of the young people I've been interacting with have been unconscious to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's, and there is the unconsciousness of how they were raised, what they were told, what they went through. Perhaps emotional unavailability or all these things was caused by things that their parents went through. So these conversations have perhaps helped us, both of us, because it definitely has been a process. These conversations have helped both of us lay ground for what this means, for how has it been growing up in such a country, in a country that has given us every opportunity as young people, but in a country that's rebuilding itself from a hard past, in a country where our parents either grew up from exile or where our parents or people who raised us went through a lot of things that some of them are willing to share, some of them are not yet willing to share, and what all this means. So that part, most of them were very unconscious to it and couldn't relate to how, if my mom or my guardian acts this way whenever this happens, this is why. It's because this happened in such a time. But it was like, how can you act like this? You don't understand me. So it does, you know. So laying ground for all these conversations sort of raised the consciousness. So it has been, to make it brief, there is a consciousness that keeps on coming with realizing patterns. There are different patterns that are related or tied to events or tied to experiences that people before us passed through. And I think it is on us to start these healing processes for ourselves and for these people, if we still have them, or for people in their families, or for our communities.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So we look forward to receiving your book, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I know the people don't know what kind of book we're talking about. What is it going to be about? I'm not going to ask you about it if you're not willing to share, because I know you really, in your heart, you're like, Vincent, don't ask me. Don't. You know, so don't worry. I'm not going to do that. And but it's a good project. At least I've had a chance to get involved, you know. We are really grateful.
Yeah.
We are really grateful. Man, Deborah, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We've been planning this for forever.
I'm telling you, I'm so grateful it finally came.
So I wish you the best in everything you're getting yourself into.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like I said, you're doing amazing stuff. And I think there is a very promising route forward, you know.
Amen to that.
And thank you so much for blessing us. And until we see you next time.
Thank you so much for having me, Vincent. And I commend you for those who are not seeing us. We're such in this very, very beautiful studio.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your great work.
Thank you.
Looking forward to the growth in 2024.
Yeah. This year. Money.
Amen. Amen to that. I commend you for the great work. You are doing amazing.
Thank you, man.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much. And catch you later.
Sawa.
Sawa.